Southland River Liaison Committees, Farm Right Limited.
Yep.
Yep, come on up. Right, thanks very much for coming in. We've got the original submission and you also have circulated some evidence.
Yeah, so that's just an amended one I'd sent through earlier, but that's what I'll be speaking to.
Yeah, great. Today. All right. Just go ahead.
Okay, so I guess just to give some background, FarmRight manages 25 farms across Southland, and they range from equity partnerships to corporate ownership, right through to larger family owned businesses. So, and I guess the key points I wanted to cover off today is just some of the rules around the intensive winter grazing, mm-hmm. and just the cost, well, I guess uncertainty, but likelihood of added cost to businesses around the consenting requirements moving forward that the plan's likely to lead to. And, and I guess the first comment I just wanted to make around the concerns of the plan is that the latest water quality data released from Environment Southland, I think it was titled Water Quality in Southland, Current State and Trends, mm-hmm. It actually indicates that water quality in the region has been maintained or slightly improving. And I guess the concern is that AES is about to make significant changes with the proposed water and land plan, and I guess the goal is to hold the line in respects to water quality, but based on the latest data, it seems as though we're already achieving them. But I'll just touch on some of the key points of the plan that we want to discuss. So intensive winter grazing, rule 23.
Yep.
So changes around the total hectares cropped. Obviously there's been the 20 hectare restriction in the old Matara and peat wetlands physiographic zones being removed, which we are happy with that change. However, retaining the 50 hectare limit still doesn't create enough equality, and we recommend that the council go to a percentage-based threshold, whether that's 15 or 20%, based on the following reasons. So landowners will not be disadvantaged, or larger landowners will not be disadvantaged by a percentage basis. So larger farms can sustainably winter up to 20% of their land, which could be well in excess of 50 hectares. While smaller farms cannot sustainably intense winter crop over 20%, but this is possible with the current rules. And I've got some examples on the next page here of some of the farms that are currently under our management, and I guess the difference in scale of these farms, you'll see there that table's got the likes of NZSF Rural Holdings Limited Ds. It's a 70 hectare dairy farm. And under the current rules, we could crop 71% of the effective area. And to me, that's not sustainable. Yet under the rules, that's what could potentially happen. Mm. Yet we've got a farm like Tawaiwai Dairies, which is 700 hectares. And we're currently cropping 70 hectares of that farm. Yet under these rules, which is only 10% of the farm, yet under the rules, we're going to have to reduce that total area to 50 hectares. So it's just disadvantaging larger scale businesses. And some of the other key points around that, I guess, how I see it impacting on some of the businesses we run, and it will impact many other dairy farms, is around, I guess we've got a number of farms that are cropping around that 40 to 50 hectares, so they will be fine under these suggested changes, but a lot of those farms have switched to Fodabeet in the last 3 to 5 years, and in the past brassicas were grown which were lower yielding, and as a result of that in the past we would have had to have cropped an extra 25 to 35% of the land to be able to winter the number of cows that we would that we're targeting to winter. So, and what I see is that more and more people are going to go back to brassicas with there's been a lot of research and trial work done, and there's a couple of new varieties around herbicide tolerant kale and swedes, which are a far cheaper option than fodder beet, and there's a lot of complexities in your business with fodder beet, so it's the ability to go back to that, and a number of our farms want to go back down that track, but we will be well over that 50 hectare threshold, but still within around that 10%, 15% of total cropping. So that's, it just takes away our ability to make decisions on those businesses, which are the right decision financially, and they're not going to have detrimental effects on the environment. And I guess that's an example I just mentioned in here around the rule becoming a restricted discretionary activity provided the area has not increased beyond the average of the previous 3 years. That's where that won't work, because fodder beet's basically been implemented in Southland probably 5 to 6 years ago now on a lot of farms. So if they want to go back to that, the brassica option, that's not going to be captured under that. The other rule that we oppose is Rule 23B around the setback distances outlined, particularly the 20 metre setback distance for slopes greater than 9 degrees. We just feel that they're too restrictive, and the farmer doesn't actually have discretion to use what's appropriate. I mean, there's multiple factors out there, for example, grazing management, that will actually impact on the necessary setback, I guess, requirement. And although we generally support the alternative consenting pathway put forward, which I guess will allow alternatives to that rule as long as those outlined things are achieved. However, we believe that it will create a lot of unnecessary consents, and maybe there's alternative ways to go about that so that we're not just going down that pathway of more cost, more resources required, not only from the farmer but Environment Southland. So we, and I think the farm environment management plans are a great way to potentially do this and encourage best practice where it isn't currently happening. And I think the farm environment management plans will actually engage the farmers in a positive manner and encourage them to take ownership, as opposed to, so it's using those plans to, in a positive way, to engage the farmer instead of just putting these limitations in place. Because I think, that's where you're going to get buy-in from a lot of people, and it's going to happen a lot more rapidly than just setting rules and then saying that you need to meet those. And I guess the last one I just wanted to touch on, obviously the increased cost to farming businesses, and it is relatively unknown, but it's a wee bit scary, I guess, looking forward and potentially thinking about what the likely cost is going to be around some of the added consent requirements. And I've just attached some examples there around, so these were a couple of consents that were renewed for discharge and water consents on two dairy farms, one in 2015, one in 2017. And although these are one-off costs every 10 years for renewal, they're quite significant. You can see that one cost almost 16,000 and the other was 19,000. So I mean, they're significant costs, and it's just the unknown around the added consents that possibly come in, what impact that's going to have, and And I guess, as mentioned previously, whether we can use those farm environmental management plans as a way to reduce the number of consents required while still achieving what the plans set out to achieve. And I just don't know how, I haven't got a clear idea in my head how that will possibly work, but I think if we can use those, I guess in a different manner.
It's been very usefully set out. Questions, or start at your end.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll just pick up the consenting comments that you made. You clearly illustrated the situation earlier in your submission. No matter what rules we put in place, some may fall outside and be picked up by consent. So my notes to myself said, what would you actually like in an intensive winter grazing consent that would be cost efficient to the farm, but actually capture the things that the farm environment management plan would guide through that consenting process? In other words, I'm saying, is it going to be a simple, straightforward process, clearly understood by all parties and possibly for multiple years on a farming operation, not just one?
Yeah, I mean, I guess going back to around that, the threshold at the moment and making that a percentage basis will actually limit the requirement for those consents around that intensive winter grazing. So, to begin with, if we can reduce the number of consents, that will be a start. And then, I mean, I haven't got a clear understanding in my head yet how that consent process should go from there. But, that's probably... I might have to think about that. Maybe we can touch on that.
No other questions, Mr. Chair. Yeah, Brian.
Thanks for your submission and information, very clear. Thank you. No questions.
Just a question about the, you talk about compulsory farm management plans, you talked about that a bit today as well. Mm-hmm. How would the council monitor the implementation of these? If they were a permitted activity under the law, then there are limited opportunities for the council to, check to make sure that the plan's being implemented properly, so.
Yeah, I mean, the way I would say it, Environment Southland will be involved in that, but in a way that, they're involved with the farmer to come up with the plan, and I mean, there are guidelines around, we've got GMPs now, so it's probably more of an educational thing, the Environment Southend, whether they're officers or whatever role they're in, educating the farmer and guiding them in the right way, I think, as opposed to, I guess what they'll be able to pick up is, and there probably needs to be a time frame around that, but the farmers that aren't then making changes on farm around these farm environmental plans that they can put more resource into them and possibly focus on those ones, and there'll be a chunk of farmers that will run with the farm environment plans and actually probably even go to a further than what's required, because as was mentioned earlier, the majority of farmers are farming because they enjoy farming and they enjoy being outdoors. They've obviously got a respect for the land and they want to continue farming into the future and future generations. So, I mean, they want to look after their asset and the environment. And it's a small percentage that we need to focus on, as opposed to, I guess, having a blanket rules across everyone.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, Mr. Davis. I don't have any further questions for you, but just to note that the point you make about Rule 23, intensive winter grazing, they echo the thoughts of a lot of submitters that come before us. So we're very alive to those issues and we'll be giving them some pretty serious consideration once we get into our decision-making mode, which will start shortly.
Cool. Thanks for that.
Thanks very much. So we'll adjourn for morning tea now. We'll reconvene at 10:20. Thanks.